Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Hey, John, thanks for having me. Yeah, Dustin Talley here with Talent Simplified. I run a consulting firm focused on direct-to-talent solutions. Excited to be with you.
Dustin, thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast. Super excited about the conversation that you and I had planned out for today. Before we dive in and talk about all the great things you're currently working on, give us a thumbnail version of your career prior to that.
Yeah, sounds good. So I've been in the contingent labor space the last 15 years or so, early on focused on MSP. The second decade of that focused on IC compliance, payroll solutions, and direct sourcing, which led me to doing my own thing. So about a year ago, launched out and started Talent Simplified. And I think that was kind of born out of really just having supported independence myself for a long time, got the itch and wanted to go out and do my own thing. So here I am.
Wow, that's super exciting. And thanks for sharing that a little bit more. So with Talent Simplified, what is the opportunity that you saw in the market that made you think that this type of service or this type of solution is needed? And what problem are you solving essentially?
Yeah, thanks for that. About 5 years ago, probably 6 or 7 years ago now, I started in on direct sourcing. And so this is, for those who don't know, direct sourcing is where brands are leveraging, companies are leveraging their brand to access talent directly. And so this has kind of been this new age way of accessing talent in contingent labor programs. And I was a part of the early stage adoption phase or even awareness and education phase of this. And little did I know that this chapter was really about to start unfolding in a big way. So you look at some of the research that's being put out, and buyers are really moving toward these more direct models of engaging talent. And so what this is yielding is more payroll talent from these contingent labor programs. And so I saw an opportunity really to kind of service what I call the direct to talent space. So in the same way that direct to consumer has played out in the way that retail works and how we all make purchases, we're seeing something similar unfold in contingent labor where companies are accessing talent more directly. Talent are more acclimated to being on contract or even being independent and working with these companies and brands. And so kind of tying all that together, Talent Simplified is focused on the provider side and helping the solutions come to market. But then on the program side as well, really how to take these various solutions that are being built, plug them into your model, and be successful with this new chapter in contingent labor.
So one thing that you pointed out is companies leveraging their brands as part of their talent acquisition strategy is essentially what boils down to the direct sourcing. Aren't all companies leveraging their brands when it comes to attracting the top talent? Or what is the premise behind that? What are you seeing in the market where organizations are maybe more successful in implementing and leveraging strategies as such versus the others? Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So actually, if you rewind maybe 20 years ago, yes, companies were leveraging their brand more so then, right? So you had like the whole master vendor on premise days where a staffing company would likely sit on site representing that brand. I did this at Merrill Lynch years ago. We were the master vendor. We literally sat on site. We looked like we were Merrill Lynch, right? But we were Randstad. And so, yes, we represented the brand. When VMS, MSP, everything kind of started coming to the mix over the last 15, 20 years, you had a breaking down of that where now companies know you don't leverage the brand as much, right? It would, you know, a large Fortune company is seeking blah, blah, blah. And so you'd see a lot more posts like that out there from staffing companies. And so largely what's happened is companies have realized, oh, we should maybe put our brand and our the experience at the center of this. And so companies have started leveraging direct sourcing, which kind of looks like that old master vendor model with some updates, right? There's definitely been some innovation to the model. So now it becomes a prime vendor that you definitely source through and the brand of the company can be leveraged, right? So now you'd say, you know, Expedia as an example. Expedia is has a role doing X, Y, and Z, and Expedia is building a talent pool. And if you want contract roles with this company, I mean, you're seeing this play out at companies like Facebook, leveraging their brand, Meta now, leveraging their brand to access pools of talent that now they can go tap first before they go out to the traditional staffing channels. And so it's been, you know, somewhat disruptive, but it's really just kind of creating a new share of the market for companies to go access those individuals directly.
Well, that makes perfect sense. That when you put that in this context, absolutely, it seems like why isn't every organization out there, you know, doing something like this? So I can definitely see a lot of opportunity there. Tell us a little bit more about the, you know, trends like this, direct sourcing, maybe anything else that you're currently researching. That you're very passionate about when it comes to innovation in the space. What are you observing there?
Yeah, 100%. So I purposefully am not focused on just direct sourcing. So that is a big component of it. And you heard me earlier call it direct to talent, right? Which I'm kind of tracking that it's more like the consumer model that's played out within just purchasing, right? And so if you think about that, you know, you can now purchase things online. There's the direct to consumer model, right? I get on Instagram and I'm served all kinds of ads where I can literally just go purchase that pair of pants that I want versus going to Nordstrom like we used to purchase those things. So when I say direct talent, I'm thinking things like these digital marketplaces, right? Digital talent communities that are popping up left and right. There's tons of them and they all have different nature to them, different models, of course. But a lot of it is focused on that on-demand deployment of talent. There are also some out there that look like they're on-demand deployment of talent, and they aren't, right? They're just staffing companies behind a website with some new marketing. So kind of deciphering which are which, it has been fun. And then you have like freelance management that kind of goes into this as well. So largely companies that, you know, especially creative companies are working with a lot of creative freelance talent. And the historical way of dealing with that was to, you know, leverage a spreadsheet, emails, like just an old school system of managing freelancers. And so you now you've got tools going in place to manage freelancer flow, freelancer cycles. And so all of those things, those trends I find interesting. It's really, if you think about it, it's the digitization within staffing that I'm studying, researching, and kind of like all of us just watching it unfold. It's an exciting chapter.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. And I'm pretty sure we can probably spend the rest of the podcast talking about
just on that. These
exciting trends. It's, you know, I'm always very passionate about those things. When it comes to, as you collaborate with organizations of various size, and when you guys talk about some of the challenges and opportunities when it comes to attracting and retaining the top talents to their teams, what are some of the practical recommendations that you share with them? I realize it's a very loaded question in the sense that it's very, very broad, but maybe some examples that really help these organizations stand out from the competition, especially in this highly competitive market.
Yeah, love that question, actually. And I actually don't think a lot of people are doing what I'm about to share. So thank you for that question. I am a huge proponent of independent talent. Having worked at a company that supported independent talent for 10 years, it's like I said, it's in my DNA. But what I realize in that is that independent talent actually choose their clients, right? Or their clients choose them. And oftentimes they have multiple clients. And so what, to me, what's missing in a lot of these programs and the talent pools and like the strategy of it is accessing a true bench of independent talent that truly want to work on a project, hop off of that project, work on the next one. Instead, a lot of companies are really just building a database that over time becomes stale, right? If you're not nurturing that community, you're not auditing that database, continually kind of cycling through the talent, it literally just becomes another database with millions of profiles. So the attraction part of, you know, these talent pools and these strategies that are being put in place is really important. But more so important is the nurturing of that community and actually staying engaged with the talent and knowing who's looking for work, right? Being able to sense that. Because at any given time, 90% of that database is probably working on a full-time project, contract, or employed somewhere else, and they're not relevant in the talent pool any longer. So a mix of nurturing that community, as well as bringing in some talent that can truly be on demand that you can pull in and out of projects, would be my advice.
Oh, that's super interesting and definitely seems so simple yet oftentimes overlooked. So definitely appreciate you sharing that. So as you, as we move forward down that process, when it comes to candidate onboarding, it's challenging to begin with, but when you add another layer of complexity, such as doing that in fully virtual environment or maybe hybrid, where half of the team is on site, half the team is virtual, what are you seeing out there in terms of companies being doing a better job at that? Because candidate onboarding experience is everything when it comes to, you know, staying competitive and retaining the top talent. Share your thoughts on that.
Sure. So let's break it into two parts of onboarding too. You've got onboarding in the sense that I literally just need to get to work. Like I need to do the paperwork, get set up, all the things. One of the beautiful things I'm seeing is where a lot of that is front loaded, right? You're literally doing that even before you have the project, whatever paperwork and things you can start to complete in advance. You're seeing this even with like background checks right now. There are some innovative things happening with background checks and insurance and just being ready to go, like truly on demand, even into the onboarding stage of contract work. And so I'm a big proponent of that, right? Making sure you can start to pre-onboard, and then your onboarding process, for God's sakes, like let's make everything digital. I don't think anybody should be sending papers back and forth in 2022. So if you don't have a way to digitize that, there are tons of products out there, right? You can use DocuSign, all the things, but go digital in your actual onboarding. And then as it relates to onboarding or acclimating to the company itself, you know, you've got a lot of employees and contractors even that are being onboarded into companies and have never met any of these people they're working with. They typically just have their core team that they work with. And so that's been great for onboarding into like your specific role. But what I'm seeing is there's a breakdown into onboarding into like the culture of the company. For instance, some of these people don't know what the rest of the company does. And so I'm seeing companies that do a lot more like networking or shadowing of different roles, so that, you know, if I got hired during COVID and I sit in one city, but I have a colleague sitting in another and I've never met them and we don't have a reason to cross paths. Having companies just be intentional to have them cross paths, do some networking, start learning, because the next challenge we'll face in this is how do you start promoting people and moving them across your company when they don't know what the rest of your company does. And so one way to get ahead of that is just these internal shadowing or networking sessions.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And I want to pull the thread a little bit further on that.
Sure.
As we talk about interview process in general, it's, you know, prior to getting the candidates onboarded, there's a lot of that conversation goes on as part of that selection process. But it's also complicated. Interviews are hard. Interviews, a lot of, the reason I say this is I've been on the three sides of the equation of the interview as a candidate myself, mm-hmm. as the hiring manager, and now also building essentially technology that really helps, organizations hire better. A lot of bias is around what are the weaknesses that I can tolerate in that particular candidate versus what are the strengths that are missing on the team. And when it comes to interview, that's the some of the flaws that I see and I've personally encountered. Share your thoughts on what are you seeing in perhaps maybe some of your client companies doing a better job when it comes to structuring their interviews, establishing processes in place that really help them be a little bit more efficient when it comes to selection process and the feedback and creating that environment for the candidate themselves to interview the hiring organization, hiring manager as well. Share some thoughts from that perspective.
Absolutely. It's always a fun topic, right? Interviews have always been, it depends on the company and like they can certainly get messy and some people have it figured out and others don't. One of the things I've always loved about interviews, and I shared this in past talks, is I like companies who interview based on people they cross paths with, not on open positions, right? So if you meet someone that's really good, go ahead and start treating that as the interview process, right? There's some discovery going on, figuring out what value that person can bring to your organization. Like in so many cases, we're actually kind of reactive to the fact that we need X, right? Versus like, what if we met X a year ago And like we were already acclimated to one another. So kind of constantly being on the lookout for good talent. Now there's always going to be the reactive, I need to hire someone right now for, you know, whatever the function is. And I'm still seeing the like multi interview process, right? I know this one person that actually had their 17th interview. These are all Zoom interviews, keep in mind, right? So they're on Zoom doing interviews and they have to meet the 17th person in this organization to get the sign off. First of all, I don't know how they get to 17 and like haven't called it quits at that point, but you can record a Zoom meeting. Why not record it and share that with the other 14 people? Like have three sessions and let the other 14 make a determination. But I think a lot is to be said about trusting your team and saying, you know, what do you think, and letting decision makers make decisions versus this multi layered approach. And the last thing I'll say about interviews is people are still being ghosted, which baffles me that that's a thing. So if your organization is doing that, ghosting people, not getting back to them. And I get it. Recruiters are busy. They're busier than they've ever been. So it's tough to stay on top of it. But following up with those candidates means the world because they're out there talking about you, even if they didn't take a job with you.
Yeah, I mean, you've unpacked so much in such a very simple, concise response when it comes to, you know, interviews. I recently made a post on LinkedIn, which basically talked about if you have an extremely rigorous process when it comes to selection, you know, yeah, that's great. Bad candidates are not going to make it through the process, which is awesome.
Sure.
But also great candidates are not going to make through the process as well. Because if you take that time, like you said, 17 times rounds and, you know, you take your time with the feedback, you know, it's a huge limitation. So definitely got to find that right balance.
Totally. Yeah. If you want quality, speed matters today.
Absolutely. Speed in everything when it comes to making the decisions, providing feedback and scheduling the follow-up interviews if those are needed. I think all of that really combines compound effect that really helps you in this space. That's great. That's great. We've covered a lot. What are some of the, I guess, your content diet looking like these days? What are the information sources that you consume on a daily basis to keep yourself educated, informed, everything that goes on in your industry?
Yeah. By the way, this is my favorite question you ask others, because it's nice to hear what people are doing and kind of learn from.
All right. Now I know I have at least three listeners on
one fan. Yeah.
you, my wife.
Biggest fan
mom.
Right here, John. So I started something years ago. I called it TED Talk Tuesday for whatever reason, right? You do some kind of alliteration. And I used to just love turning TED Talks on every Tuesday and being intentional and just kind of letting it be in the background and kind of sink in. And I still do that today, right? So we're recording this on a Tuesday. And so most of my day, the background, not during this present call, but as we're recording this, but most of my day is spent listening to podcasts on a Tuesday or TED Talks. And I like a mix of things, dude. So one of my favorite things, I listen to this podcast called Early to Rise Radio by Craig Ballantyne. They're like 20 to 40 minute episodes. And it's really about entrepreneurs getting after it and crushing it and just like insightful things to kind of model your day. And then on the enjoyment side of the fence, Armchair Expert with Dax Shepard, always a good listen. I like to mix it up and, you know, have a mix of business meets fun. And then the one my wife and I listen to regularly is Smartless with Jason Bateman. Love listening to just different perspectives on life, taking it all in.
Well, that's super exciting. And it always fascinates me with, I guess, strategies that people deploy when it comes to just keeping their minds, the selection process where you let your mind be exposed to. That's always interesting. With so much information overload out there, it's easy, very easy to get consumed with, you know, just for the news alone. So that makes perfect sense. The next question I have is very loaded, because in the sense it requires you kind of just to go way back possibly, and it essentially maybe an advice or a series of advice that you received early on in your career that you still refer to even these days and that you use to mentor or, you know, coach others within your network. What are some of these words of wisdom that you can share?
Yeah. So let me start by saying, I don't know where I picked this up, but I always like to put myself around people that are about 15 years older than me. This has been true since the start of my career. Like, I like to be the youngest guy in the room. That's becoming more difficult as I get older. but yeah, having been in those rooms and put myself in those situations, just listening to, you know, someone that's, you know, maybe a stage or two ahead of me. I would say, I'm kind of thinking on the fly here, but I would say that the best advice I got came from a guy I used to work with on, we were on site at, where were we at? We were at Oracle. We ran an on-site MSP, and, you know, he would just kind of simplify everything. So I think, I don't have the exact words you would share, but like, we don't have to overcomplicate things. Like, everything is not as hard as we make it out to be, right? And so if you even think about the branding of my company, Talent Simplified, I think I try to break things down into terms that it's like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. We overcomplicate everything in life. And so, yeah, my advice would be stop overcomplicating it, like break it down to the simplest denominator and just move forward, right? Take those pieces and building blocks. And yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And you know, I know it usually puts people on the spot when it comes to questions like this on a podcast.
So that's good.
You definitely crushed it. Last but not least, what are you currently reading in terms of a book, and what book that you always recommend to others, and why is that?
All right. The one I'm currently reading is Subtract by Lady Stoke. I think that's how you say the name. And the premise of the book is about, you know, we always try to add more and more and more to our lives. What if the simple notion of it, what if we started to remove things, and what could you remove that actually makes your life more meaningful, more impactful, whatever the case may be, you know, your life, your business, et cetera. And great book, great read. And then the one that I always point back to is not that old. It's probably 4 or 5 years old. It's actually called The Perfect Day Formula by Craig Ballantyne. And for whatever reason, this comes up probably in weekly conversations when people are just thinking about their life and their structure and like what, how they live every day, right? And so Perfect Day Formula, as it suggests, is really about mapping out your perfect day and then being intentional toward just how you live out that day. And then the next day, kind of assessing how did yesterday go and kind of continuing to course correct from there so that every day can literally be the perfect day. You're still gonna have your ups and downs, but just mapping out, you know, what makes the day perfect for you. And so love that and share it all the time. It's called The Perfect Day Formula.
Oh, that's super cool. And we'll make those titles available in the show notes for all of our listeners. Dustin, I can't thank you enough for your time today. It was very short and insightful conversation. I, like you and I discussed prior to this, and we'll send an announcement that we are planning an executive webinar live show sometime in June on that specific topic of direct sourcing. So I know we gave a little bit of a teaser here in today's episode. So let's just look out for that. So Dustin, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me, John. Look forward to the next one.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.